Good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with Jackie Slatz, Director of Athletics and Senior Advisor to the President of Lake Forest College. Although no longer coaching, Jackie enjoyed an extremely successful career as the college's women's basketball coach from 1986 to 2008. Her teams claimed 6 conference titles, and her career winning percentage ranks among the top 20 in NCAA Division III history. And Jackie, thanks so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, lots to talk about, and let's go back a little bit. Before coming to Lake Forest College in 1986, you played 4 years of basketball, Division I, at Iowa State University, and what aspects did you enjoy at Iowa State?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Going back a little ways.
Okay,
here,
but, I'm going to go back even further than that.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
I'm going to go to Cuba City. Oh,
yep.
Well, we're going way back now.
Yeah,
okay.
Just real quick, I think it sets a little bit of a stage. I grew up in a really small town called Cuba City in Wisconsin. It's a couple thousand people, and basketball is a big deal there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I know the area.
So we were fortunate. You know, you get to see the fire trucks and the parade, and we won a state championship. And so basketball, I think, was obviously really important, but I also grew up in a community, which right in the border by Dubuque, Iowa, Galena, Illinois, for people that aren't familiar with that. And it was a great place to grow up. And I think when I went to Iowa State, I had looked at a lot of schools, Minnesota, Wisconsin. I looked at several different schools. And I think when I got to Iowa State, it was sort of like the perfect blend of things for me in terms of the location, the feel. And I liked their basketball coach and their basketball program. And so it was kind of a win-win in lots of ways, I think, in how I ended up there. But it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade anything. We were not super successful when I was there, but we got better as you went along, which is obviously an important thing.
Right, right.
And ironically, my playing time actually was the reverse. I played more as a freshman, sophomore, and less as a junior and senior, which was a little bit after being the big fish in a small, pond. You kind of went through that experience. But I look back, I think it made me a better coach. I think some of the things that I went through as a player.
Sure.
Because I got to be all of them. I got to be the All-State player and high school. And then I got to kind of go different roles in college. And I think it's probably one of the best, I think, things about what taught me to be a good coach was you need to appreciate the kid that's your superstar, and you need to appreciate the person who's on the end of the bench or making kids better every day in practice. And I think that was... I think one of the cool things about it.
Made you more empathetic.
Absolutely.
And that's important. So you can relate to your players, identify with, like you said, each one.
Yeah.
Interesting, too, you played at a Division I school, yet you decided to coach at a Division III school, which is Lake Forest College.
Yeah.
So how did that come about?
Yeah, it was actually kind of an interesting story. My sister played basketball at Division II school right over the border, Wisconsin Parkside. And she was there, and I had met her coach a couple times just in watching her games over the holidays when I was home. And she said to me, she said, "Hey, have you ever thought about college coaching?" And I said, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I've got an education degree. I was thinking about running health clubs. I like the business side of things. Mm-hmm. So I just wasn't really sure. And I said, "I don't know, I haven't really thought about it." And then she said, "Well, there's this great job open." And the way small worlds work, she said Lake Forest College, which I had never heard of. And I thought, why does that...
Well, you're from Cuba City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Why does that kind of ring a bell to me? And the funny part of the story was that my coach at Iowa State that recruited me there had actually coached at Lake Forest in the late 70s.
Oh, my God. And you didn't know that at the time.
No, but I knew that there was some name recognition initially. So I said, wow, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine I would ever get the job. I'm going to throw my name in the hat. It was the volleyball and basketball coach at that time. That was the job that they were advertising for. I played high school volleyball, but didn't obviously play college volleyball. And so I threw my name in the hat. And I got an interview. And the irony of all of this is that at the same time, I got invited to interview at Lake Forest High School for a teaching job. So I hadn't even heard of this. And within a matter of 2 to 3 weeks, Lake Forest very much became part of my world.
They're all of about 6 blocks apart.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I ended up getting my roommate from a referral from one of the people that worked at the high school because I needed a roommate. And she called me and said, "Are you looking for a roommate?" after I got the job at the college. And it was just kind of one of those.
This was preordained.
Yeah, it is. It's really odd.
Like, yeah, I think full moon, lights are shining.
Totally,
this was it, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, again, it's kind of interesting that you competed at the Division I level, coached at the Division III. I'm really curious, and you just mentioned UW Parkside, which is Division II. Mm-hmm. So what are the differences when you look at those divisions, obviously one's bigger than the other, but are there other differences that you see? I don't know if we have to get right into Division II, but really, normally the discrepancy is between Division III and Division I.
Right. Yeah. Well, actually, a couple things. Really fresh in my mind. I just did a high school recruiting program last night for District 211, which is the five schools, Palatine, Fremd, Conant, out that
Schaumburg,
way.
Schaumburg, yeah.
Yep. And so it's, you know, just so people, I think, sometimes are surprised. I mean, there's 1,000 NCAA schools, and there's, you know, 300 and some Division I, close to 300 Division II, and then the largest division is Division III, which is 439, I think, right now.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
okay.
So I think that's, you know, and just thinking that through a little bit. But the real differences are Division I tend to have the full athletic scholarships, and you can give athletic money for Division I scholarships. Mm-hmm. Division II is sort of, I think, a nice mix of it. They can give athletic scholarships. They do it different ways. They break it up, but you can give scholarship money for athletics. And then Division III, you cannot give athletic scholarship money, but there is a lot of dollars available for students with academic money, theater, art, music, a lot of other talents, just not athletic, can be awarded, you know, scholarship dollars for kids to go to school at the Division III level. There are differences. I think time commitment in each of them is one big difference. I think that the coolest thing about playing college athletics in general, though, is if you can be on a team and play in an intercollegiate athletic program, I think it's the greatest experience ever. And I don't really know sometimes when it's the levels that matter as much. It's just about the experience. I mean, yeah, you might fly to a game versus being on a bus, or, you know, you might get three pairs of basketball shoes and, you know, versus one pair of you know, it's just different ways to look at it.
In terms of time commitment, let's kind of talk about that and focus on that for a minute, though. Imagine that I'm playing basketball. It's halfway through the season. I'm at Lake Forest College. There's still, for a student athlete, quite a bit of commitment.
Huge.
And I'm thinking practices, games, film sessions, weight training. We can go on and on. I mean, it's still, it's still a lot of work. And so what is a typical week like, if there is such a thing? But let's say it's halfway through the season. The season probably started, the 1st of November?
Yeah.
Basketball's always been one of the longest seasons. So what's a typical week like?
For a student athlete.
And disregarding my classes.
Yeah, no. Sure, they go to their classes like, you know, all the students do. But they're on top of that, they're going to have a couple hours of practice, usually an hour of film or scouting report or something along that. So and then by the time they shower and, you know, they're looking at it, you know, on daily 3 to 4 commitment on top of your games. Now, obviously, if you have a game, you're not practicing that day. And you also have travel involved with that if you're talking mid-season. But student-athletes, I mean, there's a huge commitment. And I think the other thing that I would be remiss if I didn't say it is that in Division III, there, you know, for a long time, there's been, anyone can play Division III. That is the furthest thing from the truth. Division III is highly competitive.
Oh, yeah.
And anybody who ever thinks that, I'm like, you need to go to a Division III game and see that. And like anything, there are really talented Division I schools and not such great Division I. It's the same way in Division II and Division III.
Hey, I saw the Lake Forest Grinnell basketball game.
Okay, there you go.
And what was it, 110?
Yeah.
You know, people are making 106. They're making shots, for God's sake. Yeah, I mean,
talent level is incredible.
Right.
And I think, you know, and academics is important at all three levels. There's, you know, I think people sometimes stereotype and Division I doesn't care about it. It's important at all three levels. I think probably one of the differences is the campus integration piece. I think at Division I, you're an athlete, you're doing that, you're with your team. It's very much you go to study hall with them, you eat with them. You know, you're together almost all the time. I think at Division II.
This is worse than a fraternity.
Yeah. I think at Division II and III, you get to appreciate, I think, other parts of campus. You know, I think that's probably one of the biggest differences that I see. And we encourage our students to get involved with other things as much as they can handle in terms of other organizations, other experiences. So I think getting involved on campus beyond just your athletics is probably one of the signature differences in
you can become more well-rounded.
Absolutely.
Assimilate more into the life of the college as well.
Yeah. You know, a classic example, and I'll try to make any remarks I have sort of relevant to this week, which I think is nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like tonight we have a speaker on our campus. His name is Al Gordon. He's doing a talk on sports and business, you know, and my hunch is there'll be 300 kids and probably a couple hundred student athletes there.
Sure.
And we encourage our kids to go. Now, that might not happen if a sports and business speaker is speaking at a large university.
Right.
I highly doubt that you're going to have,
right.
You know, I mean, so I think we try to give give student athletes lessons, you know, beyond what mm-hmm. what. And any time you go to something, you learn something. There's a takeaway moment from that.
Mm-hmm. Time commitment then, to capsulize it, about 3 hours a day, you would say?
I would say that's probably a good average, okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you're not counting taking a shower, you know.
I'm not. Yeah,
but about 3 hours of probably, okay. two to three, depending on the time of year.
So yeah. Let's go with the games thing. Are there away games during the middle of the week?
Yes, there are. Almost every sport has games. We try to schedule them. Mm-hmm. Like if it's a soccer game or a softball, you know, contest, we try to schedule them as late as we can in the day so the students can go to class and mm-hmm. be in class as much as they can. But there are some midweek games, and then there are weekend games as well, and there's travel. Our league is our Midwest Conference is.
Yeah, let's talk about the league a little bit. Okay,
it's pretty spread out, and so there is some travel. I know you'd wanted to talk a little bit about who's in our league, and I think it's helpful especially for listeners. And we have five schools in Wisconsin. We're called the Midwest Conference. There's Carroll University, which is your alma mater. Yeah,
there you go.
Beloit.
We used to play Lake Forest. Yeah. Actually, I played there. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
Beloit, St. Norbert, Lawrence, and Ripon. So that may resonate with some listeners. And then in Illinois, we have Lake Forest. We have Knox and Monmouth.
Sure.
And then Illinois College, which is down in Jacksonville. Sure. And then we have two schools in Iowa. We have Grinnell, which you already talked about in basketball.
Right.
And we have Cornell, which is in Mount Vernon, Iowa.
So there's some travel there.
Yeah, there is.
And so that's some midweek travel, and that is going to interfere with classes.
Yeah.
I think that the stereotype, again, is Division I, they don't go to class, blah, 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 which may or may not be true. But we're talking Division III now. They're still going to miss classes. How does that work with the professors and missing classes? How does student-athlete, I guess, handle or manage that?
Right. We're fortunate at Lake Forest. Our college supports athletics as part of what our student athlete experience is. So they're actually, there's a policy that allows students to make up anything that they miss. However, we work really, really hard for them to not miss very much. I mean, we try to be as creative as we can in scheduling, and we work to make sure they miss as little class time as possible. It's a really important part of our scheduling as we put schedules together. And when they do miss, we make sure that the students, there's a whole communication plan mm-hmm. where the student athletes are telling the professors right away, I know that I'm going to miss these classes, so the professors can work with them on making sure that mm-hmm. they can miss any or make up any work that they may have missed or if it's a test. And really at Lake Forest, we've been fortunate. Our faculty are supportive and I think work with our student athletes so that they can have both. They can mm-hmm. have a great academic experience and also have a great athletic experience. And that's kind of what we sell and that's what we deliver.
Now, you say you work with schedules. I'm assuming as athletic director, you're doing a lot of that then, the scheduling?
Actually, at the college level, it's not like high school where the athletic director does the scheduling at a league meeting. At college, each coach is able to really control their own schedule.
Oh, really? Okay,
Okay. But we have parameters. Clearly, there's things, the league schedule's pretty set for everybody, but they're non-conference games. We work together to figure out what works well for each specific program. You know, a swimming meet at a great school might be better than, you know, swimming somebody in our league. We do take some team trips. So some coaches,
there's a lot of logistics here.
There's a lot of logistics, yeah.
Well, so when does this start for, say, next season? Is that starting this season? I mean, how far advanced do you work to figure out who you're going to play the following year?
Well, depending on the sport, football is scheduled 4 to 6 years out. So,
wow.
At Division III
epiphany
level.
Here for me.
Uh-huh.
And this is Division III.
Uh-huh. Yep, exactly.
Because I know in Division I, they get a lot of press, and they'll say, well, Northwestern's going to get to play USC in 2017. But it doesn't matter. At the college level,
same thing, yeah. So our league schedule set, I think it's 4 to 6 years, and then we have
4 to 6 years.
And then we have a couple non-conference commitments. We still have a couple games to fill, I think, mm-hmm. in 17, 18, or around that time. Basketball is usually done a couple years out for the league schedule. Non-conference mm-hmm. might be a year out.
Okay.
But all scheduling is done well, at least a year. Like right now, our soccer coaches or our fall sports, besides football, which is done, our scheduling, they're almost done with their schedules for next year.
Okay.
So it's done about a year in advance.
They're not even done yet.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're working
this year.
They're working on it as they're in their season right now. And then we look through and like we have parameters about how far they can travel. And we work together and we look at missed class. That's mm-hmm. part of before our schedule's approved. And then ultimately I approve the schedules, but it's definitely a shared mm-hmm. adventure, I think, in scheduling.
The non-conference ones, not to belabor this, mm-hmm. but how's that figured out? I mean, the conference, I get. Everybody, yeah. The coaches know each other in the conference. But, I mean, all of a sudden you want to play, say, Augustana in the CCIW, or maybe you want to travel further for a real interesting experience. Yeah. Play an East Coast team or something like that. Yeah. How's that all figured out?
Yeah, that's in conversation with the coach. They would talk with me about who they want to play. But we have some things, like I've missed class. We can't travel far if it's a midweek game. So you're going to end up playing like a Carthage, which is in the CCIW. And we're so lucky because we have three or four different leagues within an hour and a half.
Right.
Much different if you're, you know, an isolated institution. So we've got some flexibility to be able to play some close schools. But at the same time, when we can maximize a break period, you know, we do look at our teams traveling. And we have a team trip plan where our winter and spring teams travel on a regular cycle. So our winter teams take a trip once every other year, and it's somewhere fun. I mean, they try to go somewhere warm. The hockey teams travel out east generally every
other
year.
This is really neat.
And then the softball team always goes warm. Softball and tennis will go to a warm climate.
That'll be like over the break?
Yeah,
they'll
over
go for like
break.
A week or so. Okay.
Yeah, and the same thing in the winter. We have a long winter break. The teams will travel then when they can. But that takes some fundraising. I mean, that's not something that takes effort to be able to do those team trips. The student athletes are involved with funding that, and there's a big difference.
Like, and we didn't Division talk I, about that. Let's a little bit about the funding. I mean, Division I, we've read all the numbers with the big universities. So Lake Forest has some pretty nice facilities.
Mm-hmm.
I've been over there,
yeah.
And so, you know, do you have a lot of alumni support? How does this all come about?
We do. Our alumni are very supportive. If you've seen the facility recently, we actually just put in a $17 million addition onto our old athletic center, so it's much improved.
I have not seen that.
Our varsity gym is the same. Mm-hmm. We built on a rec center with fitness and weight and cardio equipment and a running track and three indoor courts. So I think that you know, that is an important part. And our alumni funded that with some board of trustee members. A variety of people came to the table to help us. And it really...
So that was all private donations, more or less.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We took one loan within it, you know, but the bulk of it, we took a $5 million loan, but the rest of it was all funded by private donors. Mm-hmm. And it's great. The facility's been a huge enhancement to our campus, and not just for varsity athletics, but the club sport program. We have over 20 club sports on top of our 17 varsity sports, and then we run intramurals. So it's really added a lot to the health and wellness for our faculty and our staff and our students. So it's really sort of, I think, brought our campus a long way in terms of fitness.
Can I talk about one facility before we take a break? Hallis Hall. The history of that, can you tell me a little bit about that? Because you were there during its tenure when Hallis Hall left.
Yep.
And I remember being able to go over there and visit and see Walter Payton up close and personal.
Yeah.
I missed that, Jackie.
Yeah, we are in, our offices are in Hallis Hall where the Bears were for a long time.
Yeah, so what was that all about, the change there?
Well, they built the brand new big facility in Westlake Forest. And when they moved then, and that building was a buyback lease where the college owned the building, and then when the Bears left, we were getting it back and the field. So when the Bears were there, it was our game field, but it was not our practice field because it was the Bears' practice field. So it was a little odd.
They kind of trump you there.
Yeah, they did
bit.
Trump
yeah,
us on that.
In size, too.
But then when they left to build their new facility off campus in Westlake Forest, then we got the building back and the field back for our use.
Okay.
And then we did some fundraising, and we moved our offices up there in phase one. And then in phase two, we took the field and put synthetic grass in so that we could use it for football and soccer. And now that's where we are today. So it's pretty cool because, like, I have, you know, I was like Mike Dicker or Dave Wanstead's old office. And
yeah.
Then,
oh, you do?
Yeah. And then
that's,
the other end is
pretty heady.
The other end is the McCaskey shared an office, and we made a room that overlooks the field. So it's pretty cool. But there's one piece in the middle for anyone who's a soccer fan is that the Chicago Fire. So right at the time, so after the Bears left, the Chicago Fire was looking for a home in Chicago. And the league was just getting started, and it was the time we were fundraising for trying to get the money to renovate Farwell Field, or renovate Hallis Hall and Farwell Field for our uses, and it worked out perfectly. So then they came, and they actually used our facility, but the nice thing about them is they practice in the morning, which we don't use it in the morning. And then it was perfect. And
this
so then
neat.
They had a locker room in our building.
Sure.
And then only recently, you know, about 5 or 6 years ago, they built their new facility out away from us, and then they left us. So we've had two. It's been kind of a cool thing.
How fun.
Yeah.
We are talking to Jackie Slatz, Director of Athletics and Senior Advisor to the President of Lake Forest College, Now, when we come back, we'll talk to Jackie about her 22-year career as a basketball coach. And we started to kind of touch on it there in the first segment, the process of college recruiting. Very interesting. You're listening to Word of Mouth. Stay tuned. You know, if you're from Chicago, that song needs no introduction.
Yeah, it was great.
That's called the Hey Song. Actually, it's called Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter, who's made a fortune. I think every stadium in America now plays that. Of course, I think of the Chicago Bulls and Michael Jordan and Luke Longley and that whole group of B.J. Armstrong and Scottie Pippen. Yeah, I can go on and on, but yeah, it brings back a lot of memories. And we are talking to Jackie Slatz, the Director of Athletics and Senior Advisor of the President of Lake Forest College, and also a basketball coach at Lake Forest College, a very successful one for 22 years, from 1986 to 2008. As a matter of fact, Jackie's teams claimed 6 conference titles and has a career-winning percentage that ranks among hers does, the top 20 in NCAA Division III history. And I think we want to talk about college recruiting and that part of coaching, but let's talk about your successful career first. And it was, I mean, 6 conference titles, it's amazing. What's the ingredients? What's the key to your success, do you think, that you had? And I know it takes good players and all that. Coaches always say that, but what do you think? And you probably did, and go ahead and you can say that.
Yeah.
But what do you think was the key ingredients to your success?
Actually, Jim, I'll certainly answer that. You said something about the Bulls and the music made me laugh. One of the coolest things when I was athletic director and basketball coach at Lake Forest was when Michael Jordan did a commercial in our gym for Gatorade. And
oh,
it was
that was
cool
done
if
there.
You remember when they had like that fog and it was him dunking.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Yeah, that was done in our gym, and it was really cool when he did it.
About that?
And then it led into so it was just a neat experience to be able to do that. But I chuckled a little bit about it because one of the young ladies on my basketball team then actually looked a little bit like me, and this was, you know, a few years ago. Obviously, I looked a little younger then. But anyway, she actually, the people who were doing the commercial, they had a very, you know, nobody could get in, and it was very, and she actually got in saying she was me. So she actually got in
no.
there. Which was really funny because it was like, so I was like, well, you know, they're like, oh, Jackie, come on in. And it was just really funny. So she, to this day, she's actually a school counselor in the area, and to this day, it's always a really funny joke.
That's so hysterical. Oh,
but,
that's funny.
But anyway, going back to coaching, you know, I think success comes from, and at the college level, you get to choose your team, which is very different and very unique than, I mean, you know, I think that's that, and you have to be a good recruiter, and you have to decide what type of student athlete you want in your program, and then you've got to, then once you get them, you've got to motivate them, you've got to, you know, get all the things that are important in a program, and I think probably staples of our program, and I got asked this question a lot because how did you win, you know, you keep winning. In my first year, we were 7-14 when I came to Lake Forest, and then my
that's
second
in 1986
year,
going
yeah
way
and
back.
Then my
yeah.
second year we were 14-7 and we never ever had 14 or fewer.
Okay, now that's
wins.
Quite a turnaround. And by the way, you really didn't recruit that next year's class, if you think about it. So how'd that all come about?
Well, I actually recruited a couple really good kids
in
that first class.
Oh, you did?
And
okay.
One of them is still, you know, one of our...
I see where I'm going. I'm wrong about that. Okay,
so, so we did. We actually recruited right away the first year. I was really fortunate to get a couple really good recruits early on, and that sort of turned the program, and then you just go from there. And then you start bringing in, you continue to bring in, you know, good kids every year. But we do, I mean, I think a few things. We talk a lot about excellence and even in our athletic department at the college, but it's about you set high standards, you recruit the people, you get them to understand there's a shared vision for what you're trying to accomplish, and they got a lot of pride in themselves and what we're doing. And we used to, when I got asked at clinics, coaching basketball clinics, like, well, what have you done? They're looking for some magic answer. And I would say, you know, we've done 3 things really well. I said, I think we work incredibly hard. If you ever saw our teams play, we subbed a lot. Kids gave all everything they had on the court, and that's what I expected of them. And I think we had a lot of fun, and not fun like goofy fun, but fun in a shared experience.
The subbed a lot. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Not like Grinnell. Okay. So you're already looking at
They platoon. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
no.
But the subbed a lot. What do you? In other words, everybody was had a role then. They're not just sitting on the bench. Is that kind of where you're going with that?
Yeah. Not everybody got into the games, but we played a lot. I mean,
a
given basketball game, 10 kids saw significant minutes, and it might be double-digit minutes.
See, that's unusual.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit. Yeah. But we really felt like our team, you know, for us to be successful, we needed to have, you know, a really strong five and a really strong second five, and, you know, and sometimes a third five. I mean, that if we needed them. But everybody knew that, that was an important role for them. So I think we worked really hard. We had fun. I think as coaches, especially at the college level, really at any level, you got to make it enjoyable for the kids. You know, once in a while, you have a day off when they're not expecting it, or you do something that's not related to basketball that makes it fun, that they enjoy being with each other and build a relationship beyond what's happening on the court. And I think you have to win. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you don't need to win all the time, but you need to win more than you lose. I think to feel like your time and energy and effort is being put into something and you're seeing a result. And I think that's, you know, that's sort of what you're working toward, you know. And a win can be translated into lots of life lessons, success. You know, if you work really hard at things and you're doing it with a bunch of people that you really enjoy, there's pretty high odds you're going to have success,
right,
you know, and
right,
you're doing
right,
the
right.
things. So so I think, and I think motivation, I think coaches have to be good motivators. And that takes a lot of time and energy, individual conversations, group talks, team things. I think if you get a group that are motivated toward a common goal, I think, you know, pretty good things happen. And I think that we were fortunate. And you know, I you know, one of the questions that we talked about, I've had some fantastic alums, and I couldn't even begin to mention all their names. But, you know, that's what's made us good. I mean, they were invested, committed. You and I talked before the show a little bit. We had tons of great teachers and educators out in today, and then they would send back, you know, they're whether they're school counselors or they're high school teachers. I mean, they're telling people what a great experience they had, and then they send them. So, I mean, and when you have, I coached for 22 years, so it was pretty neat to see that I had, you know, the head girls basketball coaches at five or six area schools,
Absolutely.
And they're telling their kids, I had this great experience, go there. And I think that word of mouth, your show. That's pretty valuable.
And that's a different kind of networking. I mean, that is, there's some real pride there and some ownership and just, you know, for sake of a better word, there's some love there too. I mean, really is.
The top two leading scorers in women's basketball history are from the same high school. And it is a small high school downstate Illinois, Piper City, Illinois, Ford Central High School. So the very first year, and she actually lives right around here, Jill, one of my very first recruiting classes, you know, she could shoot, and she came in and was just a phenomenal athlete and helped us really take it. And then a few years later, we ended up recruiting from the same high school, which you couldn't have, this is a small, small community, a young lady, you know, 10, 15 years later, that ended up being the Johnson's Trophy winner, which goes to the top Division III student-athlete in the whole country.
Oh, my gosh.
She was just incredible. Allison Grubbs was her name. You know, but they, so I think, again, there's an example where their parents knew each other a little bit, and one had a great experience, and they say, well, geez, and you know, and for me, that was huge. And we've, you know, we also recruited well. My Wisconsin ties, if you look through, we had a lot of kids from Wisconsin and Illinois and the Midwest, but we also had kids from Hawaii. We've had kids from
Hawaii.
I mean, Lake Forest is really diverse. And we take a lot of pride in that. I mean, right now in our class, we have, you know, kids from like 46 states at the college, you know, 60 some countries. I mean, incredibly diverse. And I think our teams reflect that too.
You know, what's interesting, talking about your memories, it sounds like the players are your memories.
Oh, yeah. Without
which
question.
is the key. Recruiting. Yeah. You said the magic word. Let's touch on that a little bit. Outside looking in, looks like a lot of pressure. In terms of the pressures of college recruiting, what are they for the coach? What are they for the student athlete?
I talked a little bit last night. I talked to the high school kids last night at this program at Conant, or at Palatine. I mean,
so you were busy last night recruiting.
Yeah.
And can I say something? Since you arrived here, every minute, Jackie is pretty busy. And I'm assuming some of that has to do with recruiting.
Yeah.
How
actually,
about
I
that?
Don't. Well, actually, I because I'm not coaching basketball anymore, I don't have quite the pressure. I'm doing a lot of other things.
But it's on your mind.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, okay. So this program last night is really to help high school students and their parents kind of feel comfortable with the recruiting process.
Right.
That's the intent of the program last night. But going into that a little bit, I mean, recruiting is it's your livelihood as a college coach because you've got to bring in good players in order to have good programs.
Right.
And, of course, every coach wants to have the best team they can when they're out there, and that's what they're trying to do. And some years you need a point guard, some years you need a quarterback, depending on your sport.
Right.
And but coaches work unbelievably hard at recruiting, and they know that that's their key, is being able to bring in the right people for their programs. And it's competitive. You know, every, you know, especially at schools, you know, you take, you're at a good academic school, so you need someone that's bright and talented, okay? Then you're turning around, and a lot of people want bright and talented kids. So you have to be able to sell what's unique about your program, your school, your experience. And I think coaches do a good job of that. If you've got a good product to sell, it's easy to recruit. I think...
take me through the process, though. Okay, I'm a athlete, and I'm at... I don't know, let's say Antioch High School. How do you go about contacting the student, and do you initially go to their games?
Yeah.
Take
Usually,
it from there.
Yep, oh, sure. Well, first of all, coaches see kids play in a whole lot of ways. I mean, they go to, there's all kinds of recruiting camps. There's just high school games. There's newspapers. There's referrals. So names come up. We get a huge number of names from our college does search names. Kids express interest in their sport. So there's all kinds of ways that you get this big group of kids.
Wow.
But then what happens is the coaches have to take that group, and then you start paring it down a little bit and trying to see game film, go to games, learn more about kids. So then you usually call high school coaches, you call the kids themselves and try to get more information about what they want.
At what point do you call them? Do you wait a little bit?
No. I mean, if it's somebody that you saw play, like if you went to a high school game,
yes.
And again, I might go to watch one student at a high school game, a student athlete, and turn around and see somebody from the other team. The next day, I'm calling that coach from the other team saying, hey, what's this person? Where are they going to school? So, I mean, people don't wait, because if you see something you like, you got to get on it pretty quickly and start that process. And the recruiting process, once someone's in your system, which means they've gotten information from your college, they're interested in you, you're interested in them, then it becomes very much a relationship. You're talking to the students on a regular basis. You're talking to their parents. You're trying to see them play as much as you can. And you're getting game film. If they don't live around here, you're trying to get game film so you can assess their talent. And then it goes into the whole college part of it, which is trying to, is this student the right fit for the college? Are they admissible? Do we have the major they want? And so you get into a lot of those things.
When do you have time to coach?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm
yeah.
just thinking of the oh. The demands here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, no. You were on your phone there, and I might add, I have a friend who taught at a big university in Division I in Michigan, and, there'd be that moment where she'd wake up in the morning, and there'd be a that second or two where she didn't have to recruit.
Yeah, recruiting.
And then now with social media, she was with the smartphone. She was on the phone, the smartphone texting or whatever, or looking at this. I guess there's all kinds of sites.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're off to the races, and you still have to do your job, though that is your job.
Yeah.
It seems like you're kind of chasing the tiger a little bit.
Yeah, I think the amount of time and energy that goes into recruiting is actually underestimated by a lot of people, because student athletes just don't automatically show up. And I mean, you don't have good teams. They just don't, all of a sudden I got 15 good basketball players showing up. It doesn't work like that.
For anybody.
No, for anybody.
Alabama
or Duke
or anybody.
Well,
okay,
And even them. I mean, it's the same competitive. Even if you're at Duke, you're recruiting against, other great academic schools like that. So it's still, it's about selling your school, your program. I mean, it's still you have to win that race in the end. And I think, coaches that are good at it are able to sell things like history and tradition and the experience at their school that makes it unique. We started something a couple years ago at Lake Forest called the Forrester Game Plan, which is sort of a career focus for our student athletes, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that they're equipped for the rest of their lives, too, and that we're using our great alumni network to help connect those kids, help them get jobs, help them be, we're bringing alums back to our campus to talk with our student athletes. So they, it's giving them an edge to
career.
On other people. I mean, and again, that's something unique about our athletic program, that our 350 or 400 student athletes are getting something that not everybody is getting. So, There are different ways to make programs unique. I mentioned to you earlier that we talk a lot about tradition of excellence at Lake Forest College. Mm-hmm. If you walk in any building, it says that. Our coaches believe that. We have a fantastic coaching staff. Of all of our coaches, we had, five coaches receive Coach of the Year honors mm-hmm. in our league. So it's building an athletic department is just like a team. Like in a team, you've got captains and you've got your team. In athletic departments, you've got an athletic director, but it's the coaches that make our programs really good. Mm-hmm. Then I trust them and empower them, and they're great at doing their jobs, and they're bringing in the right student-athletes. Mm-hmm. And it's all cyclical. Then the student-athletes graduate, they become alums, mm-hmm. and it ends up just being a really nice. And honestly, when I first came to Lake Forest, I never thought I would stay as long as I did. Mm-hmm. I had no intention. I think I thought I went, I'll do this job, and we weren't very good. But it's a pretty special place, and I think you start building that sense of community and that value, and we're really proud. I mean, our athletic program's in a really good place. I mean, we're winning right now, 66% of all of our fall contests. We've got, I think we're almost 80% winning percentage in our league. Got a lot of teams that are getting excited about competition. Championships are mm-hmm. coming up for the fall sports. Winter's already kicked off.
Right.
The college just added varsity golf, too, which is kind of an interesting side mm-hmm. bit. Mm-hmm. So we'll have our first varsity golf program. We had it a long time ago in the 50s, but we just brought it back. So it's a great part of Lake Forest College. But the college itself is what's the...
In other words, the college itself, wherever college may be, mm-hmm. that will sell, mm-hmm. and that'll be part of the recruiting package.
You've got to love that, number one.
That's got to be number
yep.
one.
And then icing on the cake or a close second is what we can give you as a student-athlete.
Now, let's talk about the student-athlete. How do they go about choosing someplace? In other words, we're talking about the coach going out and recruiting, but let's kind of look at the reverse. There's pressures on the recruit, too, because if Lake Forest College is coming to see him, so is maybe Augustana. Maybe a Division II is coming. Mm-hmm. Who knows what kind of bites he's getting. Mm-hmm. Talk about, and you've been on that end mm-hmm. When you played at Iowa State. What are the pressures on that side of it?
I think for the student-athletes, I actually tell them to not freak out too much about the process because it's a little overwhelming. There's this eligibility center, and I think sometimes student-athletes can, if you're Division I or II, you have to do these things. And I think part of it is enjoying the process a little bit. You have to fill out the applications. You have to get admitted to the colleges. But they usually start with a list. And I always say dream a little bit. Pick 8 or 10 schools that you think you're pretty interested in. Do your homework on those schools, mm-hmm. and then go visit. I mean, visit is the key on a student choosing a college. And I think making sure that it's a good visit, it's planned out. You're seeing, when you visit a college, you're visiting with a coach. You're meeting the kids on the team. You're seeing what it's like to be a regular student sitting in a class, trying to really get a feel. And I tell students, you're going to know when you get on a campus, you're going to either feel like, oh, this could be a good place, or you're like, Mom and Dad, I can't get out of here fast enough, on the
sure,
tours.
Sure.
I think you just know, or you at least get it down to 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. And that's where that's where the pressure comes in, because I think sometimes kids like 2 or 3 schools, like 2 or 3 coaches, and that's where it really now it's like, how do I decide which one is right for me?
Talking about recruiting, and I kind of get your take on this, kind of a bigger picture thing. The Time magazine article I just held it up, and basically it's the one that has Johnny Manziel on the front from Oklahoma State. I'm sorry, Texas A&M, yeah. Excuse me. And former Heisman winner last year, and off to a great season now. I guess the title of the article is the key. It's Time to Pay College Athletes. What's your take on that? And I guess a little backstory, Johnny Manziel was selling his autograph to make a few bucks. As college kids need pizza money and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What's your take on that? And where do you draw the line, I guess, too? Mm-hmm. Now that I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's a lot to talk about, a lot to chew on. But you, as a college basketball coach, an athletic director, what's your take on it's time to pay college athletes? A fascinating story about Texas A&M and Time magazine.
I don't think it's time to pay college athletes, but I guess you should take it back. I think that we could increase the stipend for some of the kids at that are giving. Really, they don't have time. At the Division I and II levels, they don't have time to do anything but be on their scholarship, especially Division I schools. I think you could give them a stipend. This is my personal opinion. So they wouldn't have to worry about pizza money and having money to go out and do things, but not to the amount that a lot of people are talking about. And I think I would not be a fan of certain athletes or certain teams getting different amounts. I think that is mentioned in that article a little bit. I mean, if you were to do it, I would say it's not a big amount of money, and you give them consistently across the board so that student athletes would feel like they can, you know, go out for pizza and be a regular college student too without having to do some of the things that they're doing. Because their commitment, they don't have time to have a job.
Right.
And that's where I think the difference is. College athletes don't really... I mean, if you can get a work-study job, but the Division I level, they're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at Division III, our kids can have a job. They can maybe work on campus.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that. But the Division I level, your job is playing your sport. And I think because they don't have an opportunity to make additional money mm-hmm. any other way, I think they could be given a little bit amount of money. But I'm not a fan of, like, I would be a decent amount, and I don't even know what that is in my head. I think when you initially
asked me, it's pretty hard to come up with a stipend, isn't it? Yeah,
whatever you could think about it, spending dollars per week, or $3,000 for the year, or
mm-hmm.
Different
something.
Way to
yeah.
so just something, and so it's consistent. But I think when you get into giving certain players one amount and other players another, it's just or letting them represent themselves. I mean, you're really going away from what intercollegiate athletics is about,
mm-hmm,
and,
mm-hmm.
and they're starting to cross into what happens when you're a professional. And I think the kids that are the Johnny Manziels, if they're going to be professional, they're going to get to do commercials. They're going to get all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And really, education, we lose focus when education is the reason that we have intercollegiate athletics, and that's why they're called student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you go away from the NCAA model of that, it's scary.
Now, they do say in that article, and I don't want to belabor it, but that it's a bit of a sham when you get to that kind of level. I mean, they're bringing in Texas A&M and Johnny Manziel with their winning record, $80 million a year. That's big money, and he's not going to class, et cetera. I mean, it's a difficult balance, isn't it, Jackie?
Yeah, and my guess is what people forget is they're bringing a lot of money, but they're also spending a lot of money. I mean, they have that football program. They're spending a lot of money. And you said he doesn't go to class. Whether he is going to class, there are academic advisors, there's support to help the
mm-hmm,
student-athletes, because
mm-hmm,
they still, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, they have to graduate. And that's the ultimate thing that we're trying to do, is make
right.
sure that these kids are graduating and having a good experience. So, it's tough. And again, there's such a small number that are bringing those kind of dollars.
If you look
at all of the Division I schools, so I just think it's an interesting. You can read about it every day on the listservs for athletic directors. I mean, there's a whole lot of discussion about it right now.
Would you say most athletic directors are with your line of thinking, probably?
Yeah, I would say overall,
mm-hmm.
I would think that most are. I would think, we haven't really had a lot of time. We're too busy to sit down and talk about that kind of stuff.
We are talking to Jackie Slatz, Director of Athletics and Senior Advisor of the President of Lake Forest College. You're listening to Word of Mouth. We'll be back after these messages. Hey, that's Tom Petty. Running down a dream. And we've been talking to Jackie Slatz about the athletic dreams of college recruits and college athletes. And I tell you, this is just the hour has just gone so fast. I can't thank you enough. But I do want to ask you a few more things. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Jackie Slatz, Director of Athletics and Senior Advisor to the President of Lake Forest College. One thing I'd like to hit on, because it's recent in the fall, Diana Nyad. Boy, what an amazing, inspiring story. Was a 1973 graduate of Lake Forest College and gained worldwide notoriety. Always has. She's a marathon swimmer, amazing Olympic athlete, and swam from Cuba to Florida. What was your involvement with that whole story, Lake Forest College? How neat
Yeah, it was really neat, actually. Diana was a graduate of class 1973, and the day that she finished the race, it was like a media frenzy, and it was kind of fun. I mean, literally, like Channel 7, Channel 5, everybody was out. Two stations came out on Monday right when she finished. We had a couple more come to campus the next day that wanted to just talk about it, get reaction from her alma mater on the accomplishment. And so it was really neat. And kind of a funny story, about 10 years ago, we did a interview on one of our student athletes with Corey McFerrin. And at 6 o'clock on Tuesday morning, my home phone rang. I'm like, what in the heck? Who's calling at 6 o'clock? And sure enough, Corey had my number from years ago, and he wanted to do a radio on radio interview.
Uh-huh.
So then I called in to that show like at 7:30 that morning or whatever. So it was really fun to talk about it. And obviously, anytime you can brag about an alum, that's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, absolutely.
She was a swimmer at the college, has had great success in, you know, broadcasting, and now is sort of a, what she did is just incredible, and I think it's the lesson of perseverance, and if you stick at something long enough, you're going to be successful.
She's not ready for the senior home yet, that's for sure. Holy moly, just amazing.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit, too, before you go. You know, you have a career in college athletics. You've been able to do it your whole life, for the most part. What opportunities, what are some potential careers in college athletics?
Yeah, there's lots, and they continue to grow.
Because right away I think of athletic director or coach, but are there what other opportunities?
Just at our school, which is a Division III school, you've got athletic directors, you've got sports information directors, you've got athletic facilities people, you've got athletic programming folks, you've got athletic trainers that take care of the student athletes, medical professionals, you've got your coaches. I mean, you've got just all kinds of people that there are all kinds of careers in athletics, and they continue to grow. You know, now even with social media, every school has to have somebody in their department designated to make sure that you're getting your word out and advertising.
Oh, I bet.
And
yeah.
And so there are. I think it's a great career. Mm-hmm. And I think the number of people that want to work in college athletics is exciting. And every time we have a job, we have 100 applications for it. And I think that says a lot about the experience to work with 18 to 22 year olds at a very impressionable part of their life. And I think that's rewarding in all kinds of ways.
Now, you wanted to say a little bit about community service in Lake Forest College.
Yeah. Well, actually, as we talked, that you coach a Special Olympics basketball team, I think that's pretty special. But, you know, you talk about some of the things that Division III kids spend time doing. It's a high priority. And really, I think a lot of college teams do, not just Division III, but community service and getting involved with organizations. And a lot of our teams have adopted kids through the Friends of Jacqueline program, Team Impact. We have Griffin from Team Impact, which is a hockey young man. We had Benny in our football program, Maya in our Friends of Jacqueline. So there's those kinds of things. They also get out and service is a big part of team building and also community relations,
sure,
and getting
sure,
our teams
sure.
out there. And we value that a lot at Lake Forest, and our coaches take pride in what their teams do beyond what they're doing in the field or in the classroom.
So what is your most satisfying part about being a athletic director? Would you say? It sounds like there's a wealth of things.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy the most?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I enjoy the most is the people. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, and I know that sounds like a cliche kind of an answer, but I work with some pretty great people. We have some great alums, and I think just the daily interaction and the different things that I do, there's not a day that I'm not challenged. And I think, and trying to make something better. I mean, even when you think you're really good, there's always something you can do to do it a little bit better. And I think that in itself is pretty motivating.
Jackie Slotz, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you
really,
for having
really
me.
Really, really appreciate it. Now, if you wish to contact Jackie or learn more about Lake Forest College, go to the website www.lakeforest.edu. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday at 11 a.m. when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.